Hi, my name is Laura Cheriton, and I live in Mill Valley. And I became aware of this project while I was on the executive committee of the Sierra Club and through the being apprised by Mickey Allison, who's still on the board of the Sierra Club Executive Committee. I'm also the president of the Watershed Alliance of Marin that works hard to protect wildlife and habitat and green space and green belt. And what I have deep concerns about is that this project went ahead without any environmental review. The land was scraped during peak bird nesting season as well as wildlife rearing season. Huge, you know, it was probably at least 10 acres, maybe more. And as such, the baseline for any environmental review is highly tainted. So we have concerns about that. And also, it's going to have a big impact on the community of Marin City, and it's out of character with the community of Marin City. And I hope that this, that the Board of Supervisors, as well as all planning, takes into account that this is out of character. Thank you.
I submitted in September of last year an 8-page document to the county planners regarding this project. As I reviewed it for tonight, the majority of my comments were environmentally related. This is not going to, it's going to take more than 3 minutes to talk about it, but I'll try to be brief and just cut to the chase. Quoting from the Marin City Community Plan, which mentions the ridgeland probably 300 times, constantly, every topic, every area talks about the ridgelands. Slope stability is the major geologic constraint to development of the ridgelands. The flat bowl area is underlain by soft mud of varying depths and generally substandard fill. Any development here will be subject to subsidence, differential settlement, strong earthquake shaking, and associated hazards, lateral displacement. This community already suffered a major landslide that killed a resident right at the edge of where that big mansion is to be built along that area. And the houses that are there now are constantly, the mud is constantly coming down into those homes. Right off the, that would be the south west side of the Ridgeland area. Marin City is a watershed. This is the county's seven most sub-watershed, and it consists of Marin City. The National Park Service owns most of the upper watershed. This project is adjacent to and surrounded by National Park Service land. It should all be subsumed by National Park Service, ultimately. The lower watershed is a mix of housing and commercial development. It was constructed on soft bay mud and substandard fill. You go down there and look, and it's a mess in, during the rainy season. Small channels drain the steep hillsides into a densely populated valley floor. As the channels meet the developed area, they enter underground storm drain pipes which converge into a small marsh called the Marin City Pond between the Gateway and Highway 101. It's constantly flooding. Just have a king tide or have a full moon, and it floods down there. With water draining off that hill after it's been developed, if it gets to be developed, we're just in a mess of trouble. There's also a dump. During the war, that ridgeland was a dump area. So we're talking about toxic waste. Build on it, that toxic waste comes downhill. My home happens to be at the base of that property. The Marin City plan makes it very clear, and I will indicate that the plan was modified when Braun Court was built in the early 90s. But it made it very clear that there shall be no more development in Marin City without some other way in and out. But the plan for the city is to try to maintain that ridgeland with the circular drive going around the Donahue area. The Marin City plan also makes it very clear that the area, because of the bowl-shaped nature, the drainage that occurs, can't do any more development without a complete fix of the I don't know what to call it, but the drainage system in this area. It really is quite defective. You can go over here by the church on Donahue, Pastor Leggett's church. I can't think of the name of it right now. Any rain, even a little bit, and they've got flooding issues there. So when we talk about messing with the hillside, you're going to create more flooding without major repair of the, which has to happen at some point anyway, without major repair of the drainage system. It's just going to fail and create more problems, including health problems for the community that resides here. So traffic circulation, historic flooding, and the known deterioration of the drainage facilities of Marin City, these create major problems already for the community. We've been locked in more than, I've only been living here 6 years, I understand. We've been locked into the city, couldn't get out because of the water drainage. Just imagine what happens if we have more of the hillside coming down. I just don't understand why it's gotten this far, quite frankly. It would just seem to me that the planning office does a pretty good disservice to our community when simple plans like the one that the College of Marin sought to build recently, housing for its faculty, after 2 years into looking at it, planning, they learned that the area has already been closed off to development because it's parklands, I understand. We also have a reality that the county allowed them to tear down the foliage that was up on this hillside. And they had the nerve to come in here, the planner before you, Sabrina, came here and said, but it's private land, they can do what they want. Well, that simply isn't true. You can't destroy foliage on such a land without permission from the county. You can't do it. But they allowed it to happen. Terrible. That they've getting this far when the plan for the community already says no. Yes. Is strange. It's just bizarre. I don't know what happens to laws and regulations around here.
I'll get close here, but I'd like to be able to. How's that? Okay. I prepared a PowerPoint so that you could be able to see what I was trying to talk about, and I will be happy to show it later on when Terry can make an arrangements for this room to be available so that we can do that, or you can stay afterwards and I'll show you. Okay, so visual concerns. I'm going to have to kind of go on a lot. If I live in the floating homes community, so I actually look out directly at the hillside and I see it. From there, I will be able to see the ridgeline above it. And so will people on Strawberry, and so will people on Tiburon. But in Marin City, you will not. The pictures that are in the 2017 scoping notice, a plan that they have, show everything taken either from the bike path or aerial. But in 2016, there are two photographs that actually are taken from the parking lot in the shopping center and also by the tennis courts. And they had bigger buildings in there, so they probably overdid them, but it's still, there is no way if those pictures were taken from those locations for those buildings that you wouldn't be able to see them. Beyond that, the houses have glass windows, large glass windows. They're extensive. The pictures are on my PowerPoint, and you can look at them. Those are going to light up the ridge at night. You will see them. You will also see them in the daylight, because when the sun comes up, they're facing east. So they are very likely, at least some of them, because they slightly are off, that many of them will flash at you, just like somebody was shining a mirror in your eye. Geology and hydrology. I actually told the planners about the pictures and stuff at the Sausalito Historical Society, and they never bothered. A 1943-44 photo of the Marin shipyards has Marin City in the background. In that background, which it was a 600 dp resolution, you can actually see that it's a pretty much grass-covered hillside with tree-lined areas where the water comes down. There are also multiple roads, and you can see the original water tower. In a 1950s aerial map that's also in Sausalito Historic Society that I took a picture of, you can see not only the uphill water tank, but you can see one down literally below what will be lot number 17. I went down in there with our one of our other members of the Sierra Club, and literally that is a 6 foot tall concrete 40 foot wide area, and that literally water comes down into that, is circled around it, and can go on down and literally hit for the church below. Water from the estate house drops straight down toward the V-shaped ditches that are behind Marilyn Mackle's house. 1987 Google Earth photograph shows the same roads, same water tanks. And there's a road that goes downhill to that old lower water tank and also has a branch that goes off to Braun Court. That road still exists, and they actually want to put one of their bioretention ditches on top of it or just below it. And in order to do that, they're going to have to drive down that road and create materials down that road in order to do that bioretention ditch. And another one looks like it's actually across the bioretention ditch. Okay, basically, there is so many drainage problems in this thing. I can't begin to tell you. We will do a Sierra Club letter and outline it more. And I have given a copy of the PowerPoint to these folks. But I should also bring up a couple things. The sewer capacity is a drainage study, Marin's city drainage study that was done up for a proposal, but the draft shows many things showing water actually gushing. It's called supercharging, but it gushes out at the tops. You mentioned the toxic legacy. There's a picture showing even more modern stuff. Wildfire, biggie. We are in a high-risk fire zone. And because of that, there must absolutely, if this goes through, be serious restrictions on any outside flame. No fire pits, no tiki torches, no smoking, period. They may even consider not having gas up there, allowing any kind of gas so that they can't do any of those kinds of things. It's a disaster. And I'm just going to get one last little thing in here, a personal. I lived over in 2005. It was a big flood. I literally had to walk over to Marin City to use the bathroom because the floating homes doesn't allow you to do it. Better finish this. Fire engine comes out, takes the upper side of the underpass, and is pushing a wave in front of him. And lo and behold, what do I see behind him? An ambulance, literally tucked into that low point. Following, they make it through, get slightly up to the 101 exit, going north, and the fire engine bears off, comes back, and does the same thing back. To me, that was a remarkable thing of saying, this is flooding, because he could not, the fire engine could not go through those two lower ones. And that was because there was a barometric low over the top of us, and I literally had walked out after that. Barometric low, many, many rains. Rainwater, snow melt was horrific during that time. This was January 8th,
2007. Can I just take a note? I know I was talking to the class a lot. My only fear with that is if someone has a comment that is opposing what you don't appreciate or you don't agree with, they might feel intimidated. So as much as it's super tempting, can I just ask you not to clap before, for that reason alone? I would really appreciate it. Okay, so next on the list we have Susan Langmore. Podcast. Okay, Deidre.
If you still wanted to fill out like a comment card, you can still do that so you don't have to come.
And also, I'd like to make a comment. Obviously, these women have done a lot of research. We deserve to respect their time and give them the time they need to tell what they've found. Because we all need that information.
Yes.
And so please,
yes,
with your time sign, respectfully
please
give 5 minutes and then maybe be gentle around holding time.
Okay, please.
My name's Deirdre Kidder. I'm a resident on Donahue Street. I would like to cede my time to, I don't know your name, if you would like some more. And also to you as well, because I feel, as you do, that I'm woefully unprepared to talk about this in a way you two seem quite prepared. I just wanted to briefly say that I'm extremely concerned about wildfire, and I'm extremely concerned about flooding. So may I cede my time to either of you, if either of you have any other additional comments?
Yeah, we're just trying to get through all the comments. That's why we're putting time on this. We just had to do it for making sure everybody gets a chance to speak. So that's the only reason we're doing that. Jeff Levin?
I'm here with some neighbors. I represent the Bronport Homeowner Association. Could you bring up that aerial view?
This one?
Yeah, that one. Okay, so you're going to build these homes, and these are our homes. This hill has fallen into our homes. We've spent about $300,000 trying to shore up with engineering so that the water and the hill stay on the hill or get piped down. We've recently had a culvert that has run from where you're building, and who knows who takes care of that. The county sure doesn't. Because stones, rocks, water clog up our drainage so we can't drain down safely around our homes. We had a geyser coming out behind one of the homes. We've recently spent $115,000 to reconfigure the drainage. We don't know who else is contributing because the county actually spent a lot of money to build Bronport, and you're about to inundate us, cascade us, destroy us. Have you received the letter from our Rosinski, our engineer, who we have sent you this letter? The fact that you're still talking about doing this after receiving that letter, to me, is blindness. You're not seeing the danger. You're not hearing our fear that you're going to kill us. We're going to wake up in the morning and the hill will be on top of us. I don't know why we still have to talk to you about this. We've been sending you letters, we've been sending you notes, and apparently we're not alone. If you have or haven't received the letter from Ray Brzezinski, let us know. If you need another copy, let us know. Thank
you. Next, I have I live on Buckaloo, right above Bronport. I've been here for a little over 20 years. I want to say, when I first moved here, that hillside was kind of without trees. Now it looks like this, and for 20 years I've been taking pictures of the hill, because when I step out on my deck, that ridge line is exactly my view. So number one, I'm opposing it just because white, stark, not going to happen. So that's one quickie. So any of these little black holes on here, all landslides, and I've witnessed two, hearing trees crack, 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 and I've gone down to the people on Buckaloo to say, did you know you have a landslide in your backyard? You might want to check and make sure the ground is not still moving, because those folks weren't home, and this hole was huge. The amount of noise that came with it, unbelievable, and I was frightened to death, and I feel really bad for Bronport. So, number one, the white modern thing, no. I don't think it's going to help any kind of a housing shortage. It's not going to be affordable. That's a bunch of crap. I'm very concerned. I mean, Sausalito had that landslide on Valentine's Day. Like, seriously? I have watched this hill go, and it's not good. And the water quality. I'm very concerned about water. Now, when our power went off, PG&E brought us a generator, hooked it up to a pump on Donahue. And that was to make sure that we could still pump our water off the hill down below. PG&E brought in a generator to move our water when the power was out. Now you're going to add more? I don't understand. I think the water quality at the moment, as we know, at the end of the year, it starts to go down and taste nasty. Well, we're at that point right now. It's a little nasty tasting right now. So you're going to add all those people? I think really, and that's
just a quick reminder, please direct your comments towards us. Like I said, it'll make it so much easier for us to capture your comments to make sure it all gets in EIR. So if you're facing away from us, there's a good chance we'll miss something, and we really don't want that to happen. So just a quick reminder about that. So now we have Sarah Tarvel.
I have lived in this home, that home, for 23 years. I've raised two children. I'm a nurse to the community. In 2017, my partner of 8 years went up to the Hedlands and committed suicide. Within 5 months of him doing that, I stayed in my bedroom, which gave me so much comfort and peace, seeing the landscape, seeing the nature, providing me with something that was just, I found him in the Hedlands. So my home is very important to me. What I just learned tonight is that maybe within 300 feet of my bedroom, which provided me with so much solace, there's going to be homes. Hearing about these safety issues and, sorry, this is emotional for me. Hearing about these things that I really didn't know about, for me it was just a private issue. It was my home. I'm just a very simple person. Within 5 months of convalescing in my bedroom, I had heard bulldozers, and I heard machinery, and I walked my dog in this trail, and I've walked my dog in this trail for the last 7 years. It was my partner, my dog. And what I have seen, the destruction that I have seen on this trail, walking my dog within the last 8 years, is horrifying. Not only seeing my partner hanging from a tree, because I did find him up there, to see what this project is doing to that area is horrible. I went to the sheriff asking, could you please give me any information about what's happening up there, up above my house, because I had no idea. I didn't know. I walked in there and saw the clearings for yards and yards and yards of trees, and along with my own personal destruction, this coincided. And I'm thinking, it's madness. This is madness, what is happening up there. So I really, really hope that you listen to us this evening and realize this is the worst decision that could ever be made, to build homes up there, not only for people that have lived there for years, but for the environmental aspects and the nature and what the destruction is for all of us to be living amongst. It just shouldn't be happening.
Sorry for the loss. Thank you. Matt Zeman.
So with the other picture that you had, of the one that the green belt.
So I'm not sure I understand because, you know, I didn't grow up in America, but it always seems like Americans are so concerned about doing anything without getting proper titles or whatever they need, and yet all this destruction has happened. Who's allowed that? Who's allowed them to go in there, take all that, all those foliage? That lady said that there was a document, I think it was that lady that said there were documents that you're not allowed to build here anymore, yet people are just going in there and doing their thing. Is this money that's talking? Because they're obviously not listening. So if it's because of money, it doesn't matter. We're going to stand here and moan about it, and people just have too much money to do what they want. Because we can't put a window in our property without getting permits to put a window in, and yet they can go and destroy places like this without getting any permits, and nobody knows who did it, and when it was done, and how, and all these concerns of these people's homes. I'm not below there. I'm actually on the pavements. But I mean, how does that happen? Who does this? So somebody's got to be responsible and tell us who's doing it, and how come they did it without permits. And if they've already done it, why are we going through this whole process now? It seems like it's just a process. All it's doing is, have we checked this? Have we done this? Oh yes, we've done that. And then it gets to the end, and did they really hear what we said? Is there going to be a vote at the end that people say, I am against this? And I don't think this is being advertised enough. I wouldn't have known about this if my neighbor didn't come to me. I'm on next door. I'm on this whole Toledo letter that comes out. I'm on a bunch of things, and yet I had no idea this was happening. Then the other thing is, I mean, I think everybody's already brought up the destruction. I've lived here for 20 years, and 2 years ago, there was somebody came down the road and threw a cigarette out the window, and it caught a light. And I was standing outside. I went inside within a minute. My son said, somebody shouted for help. I come outside. The whole hillside's already on fire. The house on next door has already caught a light. There were 17, because my son went and counted them, 17 fire trucks on Donahue. Because they thought if one house goes up, we're all going to go up. And now they're going to build more houses where we can't get up the road, and things are going to get destroyed even quicker. So I'm totally against this. But how do we get answers as to who's doing this without permission, it seems? How do we find that out?
Yeah, so just again to clarify, the project has not been approved.
Yes, I know.
We know
check,
that.
Check, check.
Yeah.
But we've gone this far. This lady's already put in 2018 saying this is what's going to happen. But it just keeps going. So why does it keep going? Is there ever a point where you see your little tag that says initial, whatever it said, initial?
So there's no approval to build.
Yes, I know.
Why did they destroy them? Why have they already destroyed trees?
Yes. We want to know that part, and I also want to know on this little thing that you've got, the chart, so you're doing the initial part right now. Can it stop there? Or, no, we're going to do the initial, but guess what? We're just going to keep going because somebody's paying a lot of money, and that gentleman said it's probably Chinese that are building now. Because they are taking over the world, let's just admit that, right? So, who's paying for this? Why are we continuing to allow this? Why isn't it point one, we make the decision, we see what's happening, and we stop right there. We don't have to keep wasting money, county money or whatever, to keep going through all these next points.
So right now, this is in the middle of a permit process. Right. So we haven't begun anything. All
yes.
This is like a
so can it stop at the end of this process?
We can't stop here right now because we're like, so we're taking it through the stages.
Right.
And there's going to be decision makers at the end, like I explained. The voice suppression is going to be taking it up. But it first has to go through the entire process before we do it. It's called the process. So basically, like I said, we're at the beginning stage. It's not done yet. So this is very, very early on. This is why we're taking comments tonight. So if you have environmental comments, please let us know.
That's an environmental thing because they've already destroyed it. Like, who gave permission? I want to know.
So this is a simple question she's asking. What she would like to know is if you know let me finish. She's asking, the two of you know what department they would have gone to get a permit to clear that property? And if she can know that department, she can then go to that department and look up the permit and see who it was who gave permission.
Correct.
So who, what department?
So there was, it sounds like there was unpermitted greeting that occurred. Unpermitted. And let me answer. So there was unpermitted greeting that had occurred, and from my recollection, I understand that the Department of Public Works posted a notice of violation on the property. So now they cannot do any more clearing on that property until they have gone through the approval process, which...
So is this the same people that we unauthorized? Is it the same people that are wanting to do this now?
Yeah,
this is not okay. Yeah. If we had to do that, and I had to go and put a wall in my house, I mean, America, wow, this place, you have to have papers for everything.
So the property owner has a notice of violation on the property, and they cannot do any
more. Were they fined?
Yeah, exactly. That's
what
we're
doing. We don't have all the house.
Right? Were there any consequences for...
Yeah, like losing the ability to carry on?
Yeah, so that went to the Department of Public Works.
So they would know if there
was
consequences.
Yes, you are right. The Department of Public Works.
So why should they be permitted to do any more?
They're not permitted yet. There is no...
Why should they even be allowed to do what they're doing?
Why are you spending all this money?
They still allow them to come through. They want to propose a project. This is called due process. They are still allowed to apply for projects here. Just like you are allowed to, like you were saying, if you were going to build something in your house, build a new wall, or you're allowed to come in to apply for a permit. Right, exactly. Apply for a permit. That is what's happening here. So we can't just shut down this process without first taking it through.
How do they take down like 3 football fields of trees?
So that's, like I said, what's happened in the past. This is what we're doing right now.
So if I build a permit in my house and I build a wall without a permit, you know what? I'm not allowed to get a permit to do my
thing.
I cannot get a permit to do my job. I'm not allowed to properly permit a small piece of my job. They already destroyed a whole section of this hill.
This is already...
And they're getting the opportunity. We're giving them the permission to get this permit.
There's no permission. They are applying to move...
Well, they shouldn't even be allowed to apply.
On track. That's the problem here.
I have David Ainsley.
Well, I guess several people have commented on this, and that's the problem with wildfire. Clearly, well, if you notice the maps PG&E published, this area is red. Marin City had their power restored 24 hours after they were the last to have their power restored in recent 2 shutdowns. Golden Gate Transit decided not to drive their buses up Donahue, supposedly because they were afraid their tailpipes were going to start a fire. This area is surrounded by eucalyptus forest. And if you've paid attention to the news, Australia, where eucalyptus are native, is burning away. I haven't read the Marin County plan or even the Marin City's plan, but I'm guessing both of them were mostly done before anyone recognized that climate change is a major issue. We were told, you know, the commentary on the fires that have burned in up north is that one of the problems is that humans have moved into the forest. Mm-hmm. Well, this is an example of humans moving into the forest. This Marin City, again, is encircled by eucalyptus trees, which go up like Roman candles when they catch on fire. And so I think the people who might buy homes here are perhaps unknowingly subjecting themselves to jeopardy just because of the fire deal, particularly it being along a ridge. Another bit of wisdom that has come out of the recent red fire declarations is that ridgetops are particularly prone to fire. just because the wind has a venturi effect. Winds accelerate over ridge crests. Well, if you walked up along Alta Avenue during the last electricity outage, and it was because of the winds had increased, and if you walked up there, it's pretty amazing. There was like eucalyptus bark and trees, you know. They just were blown up the slope. So it's a real issue, and I would hope that the planning, Marin County Planning Department is, really paying attention to climate change. It is a real thing. So we're all here and surrounded by these eucalyptus forests. And so here's even more people that are going to be perhaps unknowingly purchasing a home that's particularly susceptible to wildfire. And so I don't know. That's what I have to say, but.
Okay, so I'm having more speaker cards. If you guys have more comments, I can have Kathleen or Ali bring around more speaker cards so you guys can fill them out. If anyone hasn't spoken,
I'm sorry, we'll come up.
Yeah, if you can come up, I'll see if anyone else can have you fill out a brief speaker card. That would be awesome.
My name is Melissa Aver. I think I'm one of the oldest residents of Marin City, except the lady sitting back there. I grew up on Buckaloo Street. For all of you that live on Broad, Donahue, three-digit, those areas, the same thing they're telling you now is what they told me when you guys moved in. That they weren't going to do it, it'll be okay, they're going to do this and do that. You guys all moved in. So me personally, I don't believe you. Because I've heard the story too many times before. So like I said, when they did the building for the new apartments on, up there on the new apartments buildings on on Donahue and Buckaloo, the three digits, and then when they did Braun Court. So I have no faith in them. I think they're going to do what they want to do anyway. So whether that'll be in part of your comments, I don't know. But personally, I have no faith in the county.
Who do you really work for? Do you work for the county? You try and look at what our concerns are? Is that what you're here
to collect your comments? That's correct.
We have with the county.
Okay.
Yes. So these are all part of the public record and will stay in the record. And like Kevin was saying, these public comments for the environmental review are going to be scoped into what the environmental impact report, that document, is going to study. So the wildfire issues you're bringing up, the soil stability, those types of things are going to be studied.
Where do you advertise this so we actually can stay?
There's a fact sheet set up there that has both. So there's two websites. There's one website for the environmental review process specifically. And then there's another website for just the project application itself. So the project plans will be on that website. And then all of the materials that are here today, as well as the audio, will also be on the website.
My name is one of those. I said I'd have to remember some of
the things about it. I want the rest of the community to stand up and come out and be aware of it.
What's this email that's for over here? You're collecting emails? Identify us?
Yes. Right, and if you want to receive future email updates, we're going to be adding them also this month. So
I'm Susan Langmore, and I passed before, but I would just, I would like to make a brief comment, and that is that the National Golden Gate Recreation Area is, they are methodically taking down a lot of the eucalyptus. And so I don't believe that they've done all the damage that you're talking about. But I'm afraid that in your inquiries, someone may say, the developer didn't do that. It's the Golden Gate National Recreation Area. And so we need to be sure that it's fair. that we know what the National Recreation Area is doing and what the developer is doing.
And PG&E too.
And PG&E has done a lot too. It looks so changed up there. It's just so barren.
That's not
PG&E.
That's PG&E. Those are a big Monterey Pines, and they had to go down because of the fire putting the poles up. So that was the choice of actually maintaining because of old infrastructure. Yeah. They had to make it secure. We are actually safer because of that.
And they, at the same time, I had asked them, why don't you buy the land? Why don't you, it seems like it would be perfect to just add that little section. They said they didn't have enough money. That in the current environment, the Golden Gate, the National Recreation Area, they said in this, they weren't even going to apply for it because they thought they were, because our current government is sort of anti-environment, and they didn't think they'd get a land, they'd get the grant to do it. I suppose that's one solution for us would be if, you know, anyone knew someone who could just outright buy the land for the government, add it to the Golden Gate National Recreation Area. Wouldn't that be nice?
So we do have a few more things, right?
Okay, Aura?
Yes, thank you so much. We will go
Should I just stand up, like, right here?
I'm an environmental designer, and I've done a lot of research through the old projects that were done, that were looked into actually on this property. It's a very steep property, even the area that doesn't look so steep in the plans is actually still steep. If you look at the civil engineering, you see how much they have to cut into the ground. So they're cutting in to go down one floor, and then the road is cutting two cuts actually for the road. It's a lot going into that hillside. But one thing that I don't think anyone else has touched on probably is the whole effect upon the community in terms of the disparate impact. There will be way more cars up there with the CO2. We've done studies that show that people who are wealthy do not use the mass transit. They drive their cars into San Francisco. It will actually, I've seen this being, PR for ZNL properties on their website, and it's put out as basically homes, it seems like, for people who would be working in the San Francisco area and further down, maybe Silicon Valley. I don't see any benefit to the community that's going to equal the amount of environmental damage to a very fragile hillside and possibly be an earthing, we don't know, kind of toxins maybe in the ground under there. But the other thing, the latest, Cynthia Kroll for ABAG, the economist and assistant director, did the latest methodology for calculating the RENA, the Regional Housing Needs Assessment. And the iterative process, or the feedback loop, is showing that it's best to put houses where the jobs are. There are not jobs in Marin City to support these houses. They're single-family dwellings. They will raise the median area income. They will affect all of the property around them in terms of that. So I believe that we really need to look deeply into it. And I know we have two more processes, the planning process, right? And then a process where we can hopefully, I hope other people will give comments and we can give them until tomorrow. Is that
no, until Tuesday.
Until Tuesday, okay, great. Definitely people have talked about the fire. There'll be many more vehicles up there. That means many more people. We don't know how many parties are going to be up there, how many will be used for Airbnbs, we don't know. These are single-family residences. They will have all of the privileges that anybody who owns their own home has, so there's no control over that. I believe that it's a hazard to the community and the watershed, which we already know through the two studies, has a lot of storm surges already. It's failing.
It's a fragile watershed. And I know that the BCDC, if there's more pollution that goes into the bay from that little manual gate underneath Gateway Shopping Center, if more pollution goes into it, then the BCDC will be taking control of that area. So I think there's some very deep issues in terms of the environment to look at. I believe that we really do need a community plan before anything that is allowed to develop, but before we develop any undeveloped area in that region. Thank you.
Thank you.
Can I ask a question about the green space? Is the developer planning to donate that land to the recreation area, or is that going to be part of maintained as ownership, separate ownership? What's the long-term plan on that green space?
I do not think I've seen that in the
map.
She has not seen it in application proposal. And order,
in the future, the
and order,
one thing is they talk about affordable housing. I want to know who's affordable housing. Because they're up on a ridge, they're going to have a view. I don't think that's affordable to my kid. So I'm kind of wondering, you know, the word affordable. Sorry,
the word's affordable. My kid, I think not. Up on a ridge with probably a fairly decent view. So we can leave the word affordable out. The other thing, people were talking about some of the clearing that had been done up there, and then you saw the wattles go in with this little sign up on the wall that said, you know, cease and desist, more or less. There was no permit. Well, I called on that, and then when they started to continue, it was the planning commission that says, you fix what you did. So then they went out and had to take care of it, cleaning, putting the wattles down to make sure things weren't happening. So that was the backside of them getting up there and doing stuff without a permit. They did say, go up there and fix what you did.
From the planning commission.
It's not fixed. Melanie, what's your name?
My name is Melanie Hamburger. I am not going to speak because I don't live in the community. I live on Liberty Dock. But I've worked in Marin City for 4 years, and because of my work at the Marin City Health and Wellness Center, I know that this community is severely affected by social determinants of health. And this is an amazing place. I've been so privileged to work here with resilient people who have rich histories and a rich spirit of community. The part of the CEQA analysis that really bothers me is that I'm the fundraiser at the clinic, and I used to be an environmental fundraiser, and this, to me, is really a case of environmental justice. It's clear that the manor house on that property is built in the middle of protected space, so I'm guessing that the developer will propose that there be mitigation. So they are taking protected space that is adjacent to a resource-deprived community because they think they can. And I really question that. The county over and over again states its commitment to equity. This, to me, is a real example of inequity. And in Marin City, because the average income here is much lower than the county average, people have shorter lifespans, they suffer disproportionately from mostly preventable illness. These are real things that this community faces, and much of the richness of their experience is what community members brought here. But many of the challenges that they face are things that have been imposed upon them from others that don't come from Marin City. So I really question the environmental justice of this project. I am opposed to it because I don't believe it's in the community's best interest, and I think it also represents another example of people with affluence and resources taking from those who do not have this.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Well, thank you. Okay, so I don't have any more speaker cards. Can I add a couple of things?
I see you by time.
Yes.
Oh,
yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
I guess I could point out a couple of things on this picture. It would help you. This is the old original water tower. It was here. See this little bump down here? That's where the lower water tank is that we walked into. So you actually see it as a large little bump here, a round circle. On the Oakwood map that they had with one of the earlier projects, they actually had a circle. In the Marin View map, that was 2006, 2004, they actually labeled it as concrete pad. So that's it. The road comes up like this and then goes up here. So this is the road, and they want to put a bioretention pond in here. The road then goes from off from here, comes down sort of like this, and wanders its way over here to Ron Court. It's a little bit hard, but there's another bioretention area down here that would actually appear to be on the road. And I do have the pictures of that if you want to see them later. Okay, there is this path. I mean, it's really hard to see. There's a path that comes down here. This is clear. It has, it's flat on top, and then it goes like that. I walked up it, it's a hall. It's not that long. It comes down here. This is going to be pedestrian and access for these homes here, so they can walk up to the Alpha Fire Road here. There's also an access here. Mountain bikers. Up, back, and forth, and they can circle. Mountain bikers, wet drinks, sorry to use the term. But that literally is it. They come straight down that hill, make a hard left onto that road, and ride out there and can turn. It is a disaster. You know, I mean, I showed that to a mountain biker that doesn't live near here, anywhere near here, and he said, oh God, yes. So, that is the problem. One of the other things I want to point out is that this thing here, there was some, it's something Bugosia, I can't remember the name, but it's a huge plant that grows up on stalk and then has leaves that fly out and a big blue flower on top. That was growing here, and you can see bits and pieces of it. That is infested, this area here. This area here is also infested with it going down. And this is a steep, steep drop. It doesn't appear to be as steep as it is, but it's steep. This area here that they cleared is all broom. In 2017, it was night native grasses and wildflowers. Broom came in, and it is now the stalk. So they have really created a problem with that. One last thing is, right here, there's a nice little, someone built this beautiful little bench. It's great. You can lean back in it, you can sit there. Everyone knows it.
What is the residence?
Okay, I hiked that regularly. I have on four occasions seen smokers right there at that area. Talk to them every time, mostly young people, saying, hey, this is not a good idea. You could set fire to it and create a problem for everyone. Fortunately, they were all on low wind days, and two of them were during wintertime when it was starting to get wet. I've also picked up innumerable cigarette butts all along that firework. So that is a problem that is hard to deal with, but maybe there needs to be a no smoking sign out there.
Will we be able to see those homes from the trail?
If you look at the 2016 thing and you're up here, yes, absolutely. Nice. You can look right over the top of it. If you're at that area here, this will be a little harder, but you may see some. If you're here, right now there's an old access point below that bench, and you'll definitely see them there. And if you live in Summit Apartments, you will be looking out at them on an angle, so you'll be looking out and they'll be straight ahead of you. And if you're in that recreation room or swimming pool, you will see them, and you will not see much of yourself behind.
Okay, so we don't have any more speaker cards.
Could we have the name of the individuals that who finally make this decision? Or is it just simply the board of supervisors?
Oh, the board of supervisors.
So since we don't have more speaker cards, we can stay here until 8, but I think we're going to adjourn the speaking part of this. You can still come up and bring us your comments. If you have questions, you can
welcome. Thank you some time, so I would like to.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. Yes. I'm not sure if anybody else had any other comments.
And a couple of questions as well. I think, I hope this is an environmental consideration. The plans show a double retaining wall. And the question that I have is, one, what about the potential liquefaction given the soil and the nature of the soil? And I think there needs to be some really unbiased, independent investigator to look deeply at the soils on this land. The double retaining walls, can they really hold back soil once it's overloaded with water during the seasonal rains that we have here? And how deep do you have to go to build a double retaining wall? What impact does that have on the stability of the slope, which clearly is a major problem? I wonder about the environmental study, the results of it. Let's say that the persons looking at the environmental impact determine that the impact is extreme, it's negative, it's detrimental. It's all the negative things that we know that it is. What happens to that? Do you still go forward with the rest of the process?
So, that, like I said, it's a public disclosure document. So now we will all have all of this information. This will also be what informs the next part of the process, which is the Planning Commission. They have to look at it. Like I said, there's going to be alternatives proposed. Like I said, they have to look at the whole scope of it, everything that was covered. And then that's what informs the next process, whether what they recommend to the Board of Supervisors. So, like I said, there's multiple steps in this.
But are they independent? So, like this lady said, okay. Are they independent environmental? Because the people that are looking at this,
the environmental consultants?
Yes.
Yeah, they're a third party. They were hired by the county of Marin with funds that the applicant paid the county, but they're a third party. They're not related to any.
How much? The applicant paid the
county. I don't remember. I'd have to get back to you on that. I don't remember the exact amount. But in any case, like I said, they funded the contract. The county, though, is the third party here. So, like I said, with the consultant as the environmental experts or practice document. So, yeah, so that's how it works.
So you're saying that once the study is done, even if its impact is found to be detrimental, harmful, all of those things, you can still discuss it. Options are given, and they can still go forward. Is that correct? Well, it's a possibility.
It's up to the decision makers to make a decision.
Okay.
So they don't consider our votes.
Well, yeah, they're the constituents. So, like I said, you guys are key players as far as being able to help inform what needs to be covered in this environmental document.
I just wonder about the independence of each people, or of the people making these decisions, and how much influence the buyers have over these people.
Well, like I said,
I wanted to add a few comments before. Betsy has one question. Could you keep forgetting it?
Sure.
This plan was to be on the other side of the bridge as well, Tennessee Valley. It was put down by them. That's it. That's my understanding. Tennessee Valley did not like it, but rejected it. So my question is, how can we find out their community plan would absolutely prohibit it, for sure, because of the nature of the community plan. Our community plan should have prohibited it, but it didn't. I guess you still get the process regardless of the community plan.
So that's a good point.
So
how do we find out how they did?
Does the county of Marin know why Tennessee Valley rejected this?
As a separate project, yeah. That's a few,
well, of course, it's a separate project.
So we are still in Marin.
We're going to be looking at all the cumulative impacts and these other projects in the area. So
but our planning office would have information about what Tennessee Valley did. Is that not correct?
Probably.
Yes. If it was an application.
Yes. Also, sir, could you say your name? Let's see it for the record because you got to speak again.
Marilyn Knackle.
Thank you.
Okay. So I wanted to introduce myself. I'm Rachel Reed, and I work with Tammy and Sabrina. And first, I wanted to thank you for taking the time to come out tonight, share your concerns, your frustrations. This is your home. We're here to learn. I wanted to also tell you and reiterate that we do not advocate for or against the project. The environmental document will not advocate for or against the project. We don't discriminate against applicants. It's due process. We receive applications. People are free to apply. That does not equate to project approval. So I just wanted to be clear on the process part of it.
Can you speak?
Yes,
sorry.
Can you speak more as to why they had already cleared the land and then had to desist?
And that would be through the Department of Public Works, since they handled that notice of violation. It sounds like they did require them to go back in and do cleanup. I don't know if there was a fee involved or not. That wasn't.
But it's the same people.
I believe it's the same applicant. And again, nothing is a secret. That all the applicant's information and materials, this is all public record. You can find the application materials on our website, as well as come forward for a counter and look at it. So that's all public information. Another thing is that the EIR, the CEQA document, is only one piece of information that the Board of Supervisors is going to consider when they approve the project. So it's really just one informative disclosure document. Somebody had asked a question about what if there's an environmental impact, and it's very bad, and I think the assumption was it couldn't be mitigated, right? It couldn't be reduced enough or lessened enough. What would happen is that environmental document would render that a significant unavoidable impact. And that would mean that the Board of Supervisors would have to have what's called a statement of overriding considerations if they were still going to approve the project despite that significant unavoidable impact. And so that was then kind of weighing it out and saying the benefits of this project outweigh the costs that this impact has. So I'm just telling you kind of what is done in the decision-making process. So yes, there can be those impacts that are rendered significant unavoidable, but it really is the decision-maker's choice on whether to go forward with the project despite those. And that's not something that is made at a staff level.
So the decision-makers, they're all elected officials.
That's correct. Right. That is correct.
So there can be a political cost if we make it harder.
Supervisor Sears is your elected decision maker. Yeah. But again, there are multiple public hearings. You are free to submit comments or contact your supervisor at any time about concerns regarding the project. So that's in addition to any comments you have for us.
We're talking about this being a waste of money to take this. Yes. Again, it's my understanding, though, that the developer would pay for the environmental impact report.
That's correct. That contract, the consultants, we independently selected and hired ESA, an environmental consulting firm, and we managed them. It's very unbiased. The applicant does not have contact with them. They prepared reports on our behalf and on your behalf. All the cost is paid for by the applicant, so this is not like the taxpayers are footing the bill for that. And the applicant, when the report comes out in draft form, they have the same opportunity to comment it on it as you do. But they do not weigh in on the administrative document. It's a very hands-off process.
Can I ask you a question?
Yes.
Do you know if there's when the next Flood Zone 3 meeting is going to be? Because we went through a process in 2016 and 2017 to study the watershed and study the lack of capacity that's happening now causing the flooding. And it definitely seems to follow up on what everybody's saying, that we're pushing a process in a watershed for which no money has been put or found to solve major problems that this watershed was not even built to deal with. And now you're talking about this. That's number one. So I think it's really important that we have all of that we really know. Right? Scott McMorrow was somebody that no one talked to at DPW. He's really knowledgeable. He cares about the watershed. I happen to know they were not fined, but they did pay $600,000 for the, that's the standard for the EIR. And that but they had to do mitigation, so that is costly, and they cannot do anything until that is really taken care of. And to my knowledge, it still is eroding. I don't know if it's been fully mitigated, but there was someone, and DPW would know, who was put on there to watch it and go and look at it and the county is really responsible. I think it's really hard. This is private property. It is a balance. But I do believe that this property is way oversized for the little community, the little watershed that's down below. And I think that's really obvious if you look at maps when you look at this set, you know. So I think there are better uses for it, but I also think we have to work together with the owner because it's a good prerogative, but we can help them make the right decision.
We're very good. And as Tammy said, there will be several project alternatives that are looked at in addition to a no project alternative. So that is another way in which when the alternatives come out in the draft air, you could comment. You could say, that alternative looks pretty nice. Or I like this one for X, Y, Z reasons. So that gives you a chance to look at different permutations of what the project might be, as well as the one alternative that's legally mandated, which is the no project alternative. So that's one as well. I also wanted to make the point that this is not, the environmental document is not going to happen tomorrow. Tammy showed you kind of all the steps and the milestones. We're talking probably 18 months or so. The next time you will hear from us will be when the draft comes out. And thus, no earlier than about, you know, 4 months from now, 4+ months. So this does not go quickly. This is not a train that is like charging full speed ahead. We're pretty very, you know, we're deliberate. It takes a long time. We have a tedious process up and running for good reason.
The draft that you're talking about, the draft environmental thing, will that address all of the?
Yes.
Everyone, so we can look basically in 4 months of kind of what the developer is saying about these issues.
You will get an analysis of what our consultants say the project, the effects of the project will have based on this. Like, from what I heard tonight, folks really drilled down on hydrology, on geology, from land stuff, landslides, geologic instability, from drainage problems, from runoff, wildfire risk is on there. So there are certain ones that in the draft will probably get a bulkier analysis. However, all of those are legally mandated topical impact areas that we need to cover.
I have a request for you, Rachel, and Tammy and Sabrina. You work for our county. We pay your salary. You say you don't take sides in this, but you're certainly on the side of the supervisors having the ability to tell Marin City, who has voted a year ago, 4-1, don't do this, who every speaker tonight has said, don't do this. We have a hill which comes at a vertical drop, which is probably not according to the law of building on a hill that has that kind of slope, with historic slides, with real damage to life and homes already, besides the fire danger, besides the flooding danger, and the three of you working for us stay neutral, as opposed to saying, you know, this is a bad idea. This is the wrong place for these large properties digging another road through a hill which is unstable already. Please, let's drop it. Please. And if you don't speak up for us, you're not working for us.
That's what I asked who you're looking for.
Yes, and that's why I said we have to afford everybody administrative due process. And again, letting somebody apply for an entitlement does not mean we're approving it.
So but when you have county regulations which say you can't build when the grade is over 60%.
It's not 60%. It's not. It might be a couple places, but it's not. So it's over 30.
But the council
might be 40s. There might be a few places where it's the steep drop off. Because I could actually look down in various places where it was. But overall, it's not that. And then what they have to do is a average slope. So that is part of the problem. And what the thing is they have to do their job. And their job is to let people apply for their property. Because you would like that same thing for making things on your house. I have to stick up for you. The EIR folks and our comments, our knowledge, and that is getting the knowledge of the rest of your community and your neighbors to speak up and write it down what they have seen and witnessed. Get that to them by the 26th, and you have a good shot at getting rid of this. But you don't if you don't get the whole community involved.
But why do we only have until the 26th? If everything's taking so long, and we don't, and now everybody's going away for Thanksgiving, they don't have time for this. We need to get this out there.
We have, it's a mandated 30-day period. And again, this is just a scoping period. It's just on the issues. That chart, you have the bullet point list. We have to cover all of the issues anyway. So all of these topical impact areas. This is just your opportunity, which will now be what, almost 60 days.
Right.
Really, you could raise an issue at any time. But we're saying it's most beneficial before we start to write a document for us.
So the more people we get to write, the better it is for us.
Well, once we have an issue with a record, like as we do tonight, it didn't matter if 10 of you got up and said it or one of you. We have to include it. We're going to focus on it.
It doesn't matter. We shouldn't go out into the HOA, for example, and get everybody to write it.
If they have, you know, a unique experience, a perspective, a take on it, or, you know, well, from my home, I could see XYZ, or, you know, 5 years ago, this happened on my property. I think it was because of, you know, the landslide.
And I'm sorry to ask this question, but how does the county benefit from this developer developing their property? Like, apart from having extra
homes
and
have the benefits in
there's benefits in it. You said we might think it's a bad idea, but they'll come up with the benefits. What benefits are there for the county to have them built on there? Because that might be a big
property tax. So if it's zoned for development and a county also that's short of housing, and they go through the process, the board can decide.
So that's the lens they go through, is how much money it's going to bring in property tax-wise?
I don't think that's
the equation.
That's certainly not, no, that's not stats.
I was thinking of the board that makes the decision. I mean, they're going to make decisions on lots of things. That's a benefit, right? Bringing in more tax, county tax?
Well, planning does not look at that. What we look at, like you were saying, are regulations in our development code, so those regulations regulate how you develop property, so we have rules for that. We also have policies that address certain issues, certain factors as well, like, that bridge area that comes from a policy. So what planning does, we are a regulatory body that looks at our policies and our regulations. So and a piece of paper that says, these are the rules that were put in place, adopted by the Board of Supervisors. And we are just looking at all applications against those rules and regulations. Like Rachel said, we do not advocate for or against any projects. We just look at how is it consistent with our rules and regulations.
But then I still don't understand why you allowed houses to be built on the green belt there. They're showing the green belt and putting a house on
top. So we have to assess this application, their proposal, and cancel the rules and regulations. We're not making any decisions right now.
So they try to do it, you might say, no, it's not allowed.
Okay. I have a question on the process. If it takes 4 months to get a draft environmental impact report, why does it take an additional 14 months then to polish it?
And I should also, and checking out with my consultant, that was unrealistic, the 4 months.
We're being overpromised.
Yeah, it's over. We still need some further information until start the EIR. But the process itself, it takes a long time. We have a lot of comment periods. We have a lot of time for staff review, administrative comments, public review. We have two rounds of review of comments.
Public review? What's this public review?
It's when the draft comes up. So there's a 45-day review period on the draft. So you can comment on that. You can go to the planning commission and you can say, this is inadequate for, you know, any number of reasons.
What would be a reasonable expectation for that draft to be completed?
From the point of time that you have all the information you need.
Oh, 6 months is probably a little closer. Maybe even 8. I mean, there's a lot that goes into it. There's a lot of
there's a lot of guidance standards that have to go into these investigations. There's a lot of litigation that goes on around environmental impact reports.
And they'll have all their stuff.
Some courts around the state have provided their guidance on how various topics need to be addressed or don't need to be addressed. So they're pretty involved.
So about 80 months, give or take, we can look to public comment on a draft.
Yeah, I think that would be. I think that would be.
Especially with holidays.
More realistic.
Yeah.
And then after the public comment, another 8 months?
After the comments come in, it's 3 months maybe. Well,
that makes more sense.
3 or 4 months after.
When I used to write a paper, the draft would take it the most of the time, and then the polish would take the
It's about 75% of the effort.
And you are?
I'm Gary Oates with the consulting firm that the county's hired to write the environmental impact.
What is your name? Last name?
Environmental Science Associates. We've been around. We've done a lot of work in the county, in the Bay Area. Marking our 50th year in business, we've got scientists, planners, geologists, engineers that do this kind of work pretty routinely.
Were you involved in Tennessee?
Pardon?
We were not involved
in that one, sorry. San Rafael Rock Quarry, expanding the Redwood Landfill, Marin General Hospital, Seismic Retrofit Project, the redo of the Sausalito Ferry that Golden Gate hopes to put in place next year.
Sorry, you didn't get your last name there.
MS, Environmental Impact Report, that created the possibility of no project.
Well, we don't we have to analyze no project, we have to analyze alternatives,
right.
And as Rachel said, the decision makers need to weigh all this.
Right, have you ever written an impact study that
every
year resulted in a no project?
Yes, in the 90s we wrote a massive environmental impact report for what was going to be 1,200 homes to 50, the last expansion of the Bellarine Keys community. And what ended up happening is that the no project was selected, and that property is all dike, former wetland, dike agricultural lands. It's all being restored to wetland, which actually we're working on that too. We do restoration projects as well. So sometimes that does happen.
Yeah. What things in
sometimes
information that you think could be tested? What things did we bring up tonight that you think you could, that we missed?
Well, in broad strokes, not too much. I mean, we're obviously very aware that the downslope drainage will be a big issue for a project like this. And we're obviously all now very sensitized to the wildfire risk. So that's going to affect any development proposal anywhere in the North Bay region from now on. And, I have to say for the comment, the one thing the EIR will not do is we will not assess what the impact will be from someone's private residence. We will pick some representative public spaces to represent, simulate, what it would look like, and you would have to interpolate based on where you actually live. And the amount of vegetation in between the development and where you are to kind of assess that. But some interesting facts I heard, and we will look into that. Obviously, we've been brought on the scene here after the clearing that went on up there, and actually that comes up in topics because it has happened before. I once worked on a project where the day before a building was going to be officially listed as a historically significant resource, the property owner had it demolished and then submitted an application to the town to build on it, and they had to go through the process.
I see.
Decision makers can, they're not unaware of that fact. they will take that into account, you know, the reputation of the developer, and that they will take all of that. There are people just like we are, they'll take all of those into account when and if it you know, arrives on their step. And I say this because an applicant can at any time choose to withdraw their application. So, assuming that they don't and they follow through, they have the right to get to the end. It's their money, their right as a property owner to take it to the end.
So, Jack,
any property.
I do want to make sure I have the letter from the engineer you mentioned as well.
Yeah.
And
I believe I have that in the record.
So, let's.
I have a letter from the homeowners.
Yeah.
I saw my file.
So, you got it from. Ray, what
is
in
this?
Yeah.
Well, we have noticed at these meetings a number of folks in the community that did not receive notice of emergency.
We set up a star, so everybody within 600 feet of the property. So
our show.
What about the
emails? A thousand.
How about the email lists that were going out tonight?
So right, the emails, so
we'll have signs. Those cards look like this that went out to all residents.
So I would recommend, it's hard to see, but I would recommend you all go to the website, have it here listed, and subscribe. Because
if their website doesn't work, it says can't be site can't be found.
Learning Highlands EIR.
Yes,
I'll have to make sure.
I
no, I make sure that it was. I'll go back and check.
I'm going to make sure. Today, and I,
here's an email list that we're
right.
Going
so
out.
Those are going to be added to the listserv so that website, when you go on it, it basically, if you go into that link, you'll be able to subscribe yourself. This will subscribe you if you choose to be subscribed.
Okay, so if we put our name on this, we will be notified.
Absolutely.
Yes,
we get emails, correct, about the next step.
May I make a copy of that?
Can I add?
Well, I don't know if people want. I'll put it over here. I don't know if they want you taking pictures of their email. It's up to them.
Anyway, so yes, please go on and subscribe. You can also find it if you go to MarinCounties.org and you search for Zoning for Highlands EIR. So there's a box on top of the website that says you can find services, scores, and information. If you type in Zoning for Highlands EIR, it should be one of the links that pops up. Once you get to that website, the whole notice of preparation, the scoping session, all that information is there. And also there's a link that says subscribe to this page. And so you can click on it and add an email. So even if you didn't get it today or if you think about it later and you want to add it, you can still do that. It's not the end.
Is there a regulation that prescribes the areas for notice?
Yeah, there is. So under CEQA, it depends on the property, but under CEQA, we do 600 foot. In this case, we did 1,000 feet because we understand it's a major property and there's a lot of neighbors.
But that doesn't cover anyone.
Yes.
So the issue of clearing up there, you know, there's some endangered species like the mission blue butterfly. And if these guys went in and cleared the habitat and there's no more habitat for those species, how does that kind of information get to the Board of Supervisors?
But see, that's why we're here, because we want to hear these things. We want you to tell. So, you know, you can still send us emails. And like I said, if you think of something after you leave here, please send it in an email so we can
report it all. Let me give you a really rich source of information. There's been other projects proposed up there, and EIRs have, I don't know if they completed a formal one, but a lot of work's been done on the biology, on all the stuff up there. So, that's not new information, but there are. So, for example, if these guys went and cleared a whole bunch of space and knocked out the breeding places for the mission blue butterfly, how does that information get to our supervisor when they're making a decision that these guys are less than dependable? Because if they're doing that, they could submit X for the height of a house and they build it at height Y or whatever, and it becomes a complicated kind of thing later. So my question is, how do you inform the supervisors of transgressions along the way when they're ready to make decisions or prior? How do you do that? What's the formal process for that?
Well, you can always be in touch with your supervisor. I mean, that's...
No, how do you do that?
Yeah,
oh.
So part of the planning process, and when the planning department does the analysis of the project against our rules and regulations, we develop a staff report, and that gets taken to the planning commission and then the board. So the notice of violation that was put on the property for that clearing, that should be in the public record. And the staff report would detail all of the public record from this application. So that does get, it's one in public record, and two, once this project goes to the decision makers, all of that information is provided in that staff report to them, and they review it.
Where can we find the history of ownership for this property and for how many years people have owned it?
Should I?